This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
All right, we're talking geopolitics, the artificial intelligence trade, and of course the upcoming U.S. presidential election, and how this all could impact financial markets. I'm Andy Gersher, and this is Gains. We got a lot on the docket today, so let's bring on Andrew Bush, economic futurist and economist at andrewbush.com. He's based in Charlotte. By the way, you spell Bush B-U-S-C-H. Andy, always great to have you on the Gains podcast.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me back.
All right, Andy, so it's Tuesday after Labor Day, the first trading day of September. Welcome fall. Markets taking it to the chin a bit. Dow slides over 700 points. Weakness in tech. NASDAQ dropped around 3%. So I guess that's where we start, Andy, is we are entering typically a weak month for the stock market. This comes during a presidential election year. So, and then there's a lot of other things, geopolitical issues in play, as well as China. So let's start there. What's going on in the markets, Andy?
Yeah, I mean, we've been rallying quite a bit. We didn't get back to the old highs, which kind of leads technically, I mean, if you're going to be a technologist in the sense of the markets, to a double top potentially. So if that happens, then usually you'll see, you know, a pretty decent decline, or at least an opportunity for those that day trade to take advantage of that. But as you mentioned, yeah, September is usually a terrible month. October is better. But of course, we all know Black Monday and other bad things that happen in October. There's just a lot of uncertainty on the agenda going forward, whether it's the U.S. election or whether or not it's how far China declines and the lack of them adding to global growth. So there's quite a few things. And then you can toss in the Ukraine war. You can toss in what's going on in Gaza. There's just a lot of uncertainty out there.
Well, let's go down the list. And I guess the first place to start, everybody's been talking about it. The jobs report that's coming out on Friday, the jobs report for August, that is, coming out on Friday will give us a little more clarity. Lots of talk about the Federal Reserve, inflation, Fed policy. So, you know, let's hit the first one. Thoughts on the Fed policy, things happening with inflation?
Yeah, I mean, you know, unemployment is a lagging indicator, so they really need to think beyond that. Their main focus has been on inflation, rightfully so, since they completely screwed up back in 21 into 22 before the Ukraine war broke out, thinking that it was, you know, transitory. And then they eventually caught up and raised rates dramatically. But also at the same time, the economy is growing rapidly. We had a lot of government money flowing in. There was just a lot of positive things going on overall. Now we've kind of run through a lot of the positives and we're seeing the inflation come off. We're seeing growth really been kind of Goldilocks. You know, 3% GDP growth is really pretty strong overall. So I would say this, the data that comes out Friday, what does it mean for Fed's decision on interest rates? They're going to cut rates, you know, in September. It's just a question of how much. If the data that comes out on Friday shows like a really weak number, then you're going to get the markets to look at a 50% basis point rate cut by the Fed. If it comes out 100 to 125,000 or even 150,000, you'll be at, you know, a 25 basis point rate cut in September. And then we'll see if they want to continue that through the end of the year. So just as a reminder, everybody, you know, when the markets come to anticipating rate cuts by the Federal Reserve, they've totally blown it, right? The markets expected 6 rate cuts this year. We've had 0 so far. So
And it traded that way, too. Those rate cuts were actually baked into the market. That's an excellent point. The market has gotten Fed policy off in a big way. My prediction is, 25 basis points. What do you think about the jobs report on Friday? How do you think things are going to hold up there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we really haven't seen a dramatic decline in the weekly jobless numbers. We haven't seen a jump in the weekly unemployment insurance claims numbers. So we're just not seeing a lot of jobs added. Right. So I would say we could easily get below 100,000 and then the markets will freak out and start thinking it's a 50 basis point rate cut. But I would just be careful. You never know if you're going to get a catch up month. Obviously, the big news last month was the 818,000 downward adjustment to what we thought were jobs created overall. But I mean, that was a significant downdraft
and barely a market mover on that day, which I thought was which I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, but overall it cemented the Fed talking about, hey, you know, from their Jackson Hole meetings, you know, Powell came out and said, yes, now is the time for a rate cut. So, you know, that's pretty much that's pretty much telling the markets that's what they're going to do. It's priced in. Everybody's talking about it. So, you know, that's kind of the layup that's out there. We'll see if it's only going to be 25 or it's going to be 50. That's what really the only debate that's going on right now.
Well, and again, the Fed often doesn't want to look like they're pushing the scale when it comes to the election. We're a little bit far enough out, and it's not like they're going a big, big move. But we do have a U.S. presidential election just months away. And I guess that's the next pivot here is, you know, we talked Fed and Fed policy, jobs, inflation, that kind of thing. This all comes during a U.S. presidential election year. It's a super tight race. Before going on this podcast, one of the reliable places that I look to see the potential outcome of a U.S. election is, believe it or not, the U.K. sports books. And they actually have coming in here, it was Trump 51, Harris 49. I don't think you could be any closer than that. That is the one that I've been watching for years and actually does one of it's more accurate than the polls. So it just shows you this is a toss up. So let's talk about the markets going into the election.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is what's interesting, that people are very concerned about this more than ever because it's a really 0-1 situation. Overall, will it affect the big, you know, economy? Not right away, but specific sectors, absolutely. And it's more even specifically in energy, I think it's a really big deal. There's quite a bit of difference between Trump policies on energy and Harris's policies on energy. That's where I know a lot of my clients are very concerned about the uncertainty that that's creating. And it's interesting because it's not what you think in the sense that there's a lot of big energy companies that have decided to go into, hey, we're going to take those subsidies. We're going to, you know, try to come up with cleaner energy products or, you know, climate driven products. And those are in states that are red states. Not only that, but you also have a lot of EV production and battery production that is being, you know, subsidized and encouraged by Biden policies that are in red states like Georgia, like North Carolina, like South Carolina. And so it's interesting, the dynamic, Andy, because Trump has said that he wants to stop all of that money flowing out for those subsidies. But they're actually, those subsidies are really generating a lot of economic growth in the automobile industry and to some extent in the energy industry. So it's fascinating to me. Like, I don't know, if Trump wins, you may see some of the major car manufacturers, especially those involved with the batteries and EVs, sell off, as an example. And maybe we're already seeing that. What's also one more point is that it's fascinating that Elon Musk came out and supported Trump, and maybe Trump will back away from some of those comments. But for right now, that's what he said. So we just kind of have to go off of that.
You know, I think it's interesting a lot. I think in the Musk move, he's looking at the broader, you know, regulatory, the type of environment an entrepreneur and businessman would want to live under. And I think he's made it very clear what he sees there. So it'll be interesting. Mm-hmm. I talk to a lot of analysts who say, don't pay attention to the election at all, that things are going to get a little rough up into it. And then once we get resolution and the hope that it's a mixed government, so a lot can't get done, and then it's off to the races. Thoughts on that take on the election?
Yeah, I mean, you can take that point of view, but I would push back a bit because the regulations do matter for certain industries. And I would also say that the mixed government, that's a great point to make. In other words, you can't get like a big economic spending program or tax program through, right? So that's important to understand. But you do have executive orders, and there will be a flurry of executive orders should Trump win without a unified Congress behind him. And just one more thing, you know, the big tax issue in 2025, of course, is the ending or the sunsetting of the TCJA. This is the Tax Cut and Job Act tax cuts that occurred in 2018 for, you know, not only, well, really focused on individuals. So you may see taxes go up on, you know, significantly for individuals and the upper income, middle income earners because of a mixed Congress. If it's Congress is mixed in 25 and 26, there's no way they're going to pass a tax law that provides that tax cut again. They need the money. Congress does. The government does to reduce the budget deficits and reduce the debt. Well, maybe not the debt, but the budget deficits. So I just don't see a path forward for them being able to extend those tax cuts.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. I've been told that's podcast gold. Totally appreciate the solid there. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We drop Gains episodes on Wednesday mornings. We'll be right back with Andy Bush after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy!
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right, we're back with Andrew Bush, economic futurist and economist at andrewbush.com. That's B-U-S-C-H. He is based in Charlotte. Andy, before the break, we were talking about Fed and jobs and the election. Let's move over to technology, which was beat up a little bit today, and the AI trade. You're an economic futurist. You follow technology. You follow artificial intelligence. AI has come a long way. It's had a lot of promises. A lot of the big players have done well, at least their stocks have. But seems a little frothy here now. And, you know, and I'm talking to more and more people who are saying that some of those promises have not delivered. They overpromise, underdelivered on AI so far. Not that that's going to be the case long term, but wanted to talk about the AI trade. You watch this, the technology and the players' thoughts.
You know, it's the old adage that you, with technology, you overestimate in the short run and underestimate in the long run its impact. And so everybody got super excited. And how can you not when you look at those NVIDIA earnings? They're just out of control and have been just growing. It's a metaphor or a simile doesn't quite do it justice. I mean, it's just been incredible how fast those have grown. The thing is that I think there's just been a lot of enthusiasm for every stock that it was associated with AI. You know, if you're in the supply chain of NVIDIA or if you're, you know, it could be a wide range of technology companies that are in that space have really appreciated in their stocks. And even like Mark Benioff said, every single one of their clients has trying to figure out how to use AI. So he's the head of Salesforce, CEO of Salesforce. So what does that mean? Well, it means that people are trying to figure it out. It doesn't mean they're successful yet. There's a lot of promise with this, but I will say this. It will be a little bumpy from here because expectations were so incredibly high. And you saw that when NVIDIA announced their earnings. People bounced it around. They dropped, 15%. Because it didn't quite meet the metrics everybody was expecting. But I would say this, we're going to go through a little bit of a rough patch with this stuff, but doesn't mean that this is not coming, that's still happening, and that there's really good things that are going to come from this. I would just say this, you have to temper your emotions when it comes to this stuff. And I would say, are you a trader? If you were a trader, then yes, go ahead and, sell some here and maybe you can buy it back cheaper, whatever your strategy is. If you're an investor, start to think about, at what level do I want to get involved with some of these companies that have been, at most, just going through the roof, basically, what price point would I think that I would like to get involved with them in the long run? That's kind of the question you have to ask yourself.
All right. So moving over to geopolitical issues, there's a ton of them across the planet from, what's going on in Gaza, obviously Ukraine, still just going at it, no end in sight there. And then you have China in the economic equation. So kind of hit on some of these geopolitical issues. And then the big, gorilla in the room is China and mm-hmm. its impact on the economy. Thoughts?
Yeah. So the question I ask audience is this: why is the price of oil at $70 with what's going on in the Middle East? And the answer is
economic weakness. I got to think across the globe.
Demand from China is not what people thought it was going to be. And so if you don't have that driver of demand growth, then oil prices are going to keep going down. I mean, the manufacturing numbers in China are, they've been below 50 for quite some time. In the United States, they've been below 50 for quite some time. The other things that you have to start thinking about, too, is when will we really see this inflection point where we're not going to see as many miles driven by ICE engines and they're really going to go over to EVs? Now, there's been a big pushback on this in the U.S., but that's not the case in China. And so if you're looking at, EVs, they're going to take away that pull of demand for oil and gasoline. And I think that's a significant thing to keep in mind. But the slower growth overall is really, to me, what's driving things. And that's worrisome. So one of the concerns I have is how fast we're going to flip globally when it comes to inflation, because we've already seen it come down. And if China continues their plan to just export like crazy, that's their overall government plan, is to keep exporting. That's going to put a lot of cheap cars and products out there. They're going to put downward pressure on prices, downward pressure on the manufacturing sectors in all of the countries, and obviously could lead to a disinflationary or even a deflationary environment. So it's pretty wild. We've gone from 9% CPI down to whatever it is, below 3%, 2.8%, 2.5% in the U.S. And we could, if China is allowed to export all of their cheap goods into the U.S., great for the U.S. consumer to some extent, really bad for the economy overall, and really could get into a situation where consumers stop spending and say, well, if I wait, a couple of weeks or a month or two to buy that product, it'll be cheaper. And I think, to some extent, that's what you're seeing. Take a look at like used wave runners for boating, or used cars or new cars. Those prices are all declining rapidly. And it seems like we've gotten to a point where we not only have caught up with the mismatch that we had as far as demand being way above what we could supply during COVID, to now it's going the other way. So take a look at those. I mean, if you're looking to buy some of those things, it's a great time to do it. But like, those prices are coming down quick.
Thoughts on those geopolitical issues that we talked about? You mentioned oil still, I mean, should be much higher considering some of the issues going on. But again, that's weakness lack of growth out of China and some of the things you just talked about. These other geopolitical issues, how do they play out? How do they impact things? Are they even a factor for markets anymore?
Well, as far as the Middle East goes, what's shouting at me is the fact that the Iranians aren't doing anything. They're not making an all-out war against Israel. They don't really want any part of it. That's interesting. So it doesn't seem like we're going to have a conflagration between Gaza and then Hezbollah and then the Iranians going after the Israelis, which is great news overall. And we want a peace agreement at some point. The protests in Israel kind of underscore that the Israeli people want something along those lines, too. So we'll see what happens there. That's kind of mounting pressure on Bibi in Israel, and we'll see how that plays out. In the Ukraine, I think what's fascinating is Zelensky actually talked about a peace plan, and I think he did it over the last week or so. But I think the Ukrainian incursion into Russia is part of that plan, in by which if the Ukrainians can take a section of Russia and hold it, that's a great negotiating chip when it comes to saying, hey, Russia, we own part of you now. You own part of our country. How about if we just swap and call it a day? So I don't know what will happen from here. But to me, that's another aspect of maybe calming down of some of this really incredible geopolitical tension and warfare that's been going on. So fascinating developments over the last 2 to 3 weeks.
As we wrap up today's Gains podcast, what's the takeaway? We kind of hit on a lot of the hot spots that impact markets and economy right now. Your takeaway, and is there anything we didn't cover?
No, my takeaway is that we're in a bad period for the stock market historically. So, we'll see what happens. There's a lot of uncertainty out there still, for sure. I think the U.S. election is not as big of a risk as China is. That's the thing that I keep coming back to. And just looking at the price of oil, like, why is it so low with the uncertainty that's in the Middle East? So those are some things off the top of my head. When it comes to the AI trade, it's likely run too far too fast because it just went ballistic. And so we're in a consolidation period, I would say, for those stocks. And it'll take a little while for winners and losers to emerge, like who's true, who's not. I would refer to the Hindenburg research that was done on one particular company, which I won't say who they are, but that company came off significantly that's in that space. But overall, the U.S. economy is still plugging along. It's definitely slowing. If we're looking at forward earnings and looking at growth for 2025, it's clearly a function or going to be of how many rate cuts we get by the Federal Reserve and how aggressive they're going to be if they see a significant weakening in the U.S. economy.
Big thanks to Andrew Bush, economic futurist and economist at andrewbush.com. That's Bush spelled B-U-S-C-H. Andy's based in Charlotte. And hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if that's an option for you. I've been told that's podcast gold. Totally appreciate the solid there. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We drop Gains episodes on Wednesday mornings, and I look forward to seeing you then.
A News Radio WBBM podcast powered by Odyssey.